Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association, real education for people who believe in real food. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
I'm Mike Kalameko from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, joining you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn for episode number 121, a particularly hoarse show for me today. I caught whatever my kid brought home from preschool, so I'm working really hard to not sound like someone under the weather. I'm mainlining a honey bear. I have a packet full of lozenges from the natural healing store around the corner. I'll tell you, man, once the sugar wears off, they are awful. So we're going to try to get through this together. I'm going to do my very best. Joining me in the studio is my guest all the way from on the other side of the ocean, Clodagh McKenna, author of Clodagh's Irish Kitchen. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I love coming back here.
I'm so excited to have you. I've been poring over your cookbook, and I have to say up front, I get a lot of cookbooks in the mail, and my listeners know that if they use the hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram, I will mail them a cookbook from my stack because there's just no way I'm ever going to cook out of all of them. I'm not giving this one away.
Oh,
I'm like, oh my God, there's so much in here that I want to cook and touch, and I'm really excited. So,
thank you.
Congratulations. Let's start with Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, indeed. Yeah, it's lovely to be in New York for, you know, this kind of celebration of Ireland and Irish. It's always just so welcoming and warm, and yeah, and it's lovely to be cooking Irish food all week long.
So are you here, is the lining it up with St. Patrick's Day intentional? Is that, do you feel like that's a good entry point to the American market?
No, you know what, I'll be honest, I'm actually here every month.
Oh, wow, okay.
I come over for about a week every month, and I've just started doing it about a year ago. Spreading the Irish food love as much as I can. I just got, you know, just work. I'm doing lots of different shows, doing the Today Show next.
Oh, excellent.
In April.
How fun.
I do the Rachel Ray Show every month.
I know you're a big Rachel Ray guest. Everyone loves you.
Yeah.
Everyone loves you. And like, you have already made me feel better. You gave me this big hug and you're so warm, and I have I should also say my dad is joining me in the studio. Say hi, Daddy.
Hello.
And my friend Ali.
Hi, Ali. I've told my dad he's not ready to have a microphone just yet, but we have a long family lineage back in Ireland, and so I feel very much a camaraderie. And looking through all the pictures in the book, I feel like that's my ancestral home.
Oh.
So how, tell me about modern Irish cooking, because I think there's a misconception in the United States about what Irish cooking entails.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's changing. It's changing quite a lot, as in the perception here is changing quite a lot. You know, when I first used to start coming over here, it was like a struggle, you know, like talking to people like about Irish food, that, yeah, we love bacon and cabbage, we embrace it, but we're now just cooking it a lot better and doing a lot more fun things and creative things with it. And it was a lot of kind of convincing before. And now it's different. Now people are becoming, like you, a lot more kind of aware of, like, the great creative things that are going on in food in Ireland. And the wonderful thing, I guess, about what's happening in Ireland is that people aren't forgetting their heritage, because we're quite a proud nation, you know, like we really are. Like, we, geez, you know, you come to Ireland and, you know, we love being Irish. Like, there's nothing that we kind of don't like about
and
it.
And people here love to be Irish too. Like, I love that I'm Irish, and there are other parts of my heritage I'm like, yeah, I could kind of take or leave, but my Irish, I feel like I'm passionate about that.
And I understand why, because there's a lovely the Irish heritage and the Irish history and culture is very beautiful and strong, and there's lots of romance in it, and there's lots of heartache in it, and there's lots of troubles in it, and all of those things brought together make you very kind of united as being Irish. So when I'm in America and somebody says to me that they're Irish heritage, I'm immediately just drawn to them a little bit more because I feel more homey with them. We're in Ireland, so when you're in Ireland, you kind of stick together.
Right.
You know, Ireland mentality.
You write really eloquently in the intro to your book about how the recession in Ireland really has driven this return to true fresh Irish cooking. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, because we are sort of in the United States in a similar place, and I think similarly finding our way back.
Yeah, I'm not sure really what instigated it. I think farmers markets, I used to work in the farmers markets and run farmers markets for years. And that was definitely a really exciting place to be. Because as you know, like without great farmers and without great fishermen, my uncle and my grandpa, they were fishermen. Without those people, those heroes really, the food heroes, they're the stars. The unsung heroes, out those people who graft every day and are committed to sustainability and to that, we don't have a great food culture. So it all kind of stemmed from there. And then through the farmers markets, them kind of connecting probably for the first time with people, with, you know, their now customers. I remember when I first started, you know, running farmers markets and convincing different farmers to come up. And I'd go to their house and go, like, it'd be brilliant, and this is what we could do with your product, blah, 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 or your potatoes or whatever. And they would be like, oh, jeez, Clodagh, there's no way I'm taking a stand at the market. I'd be mortified. And that was the mentality, that it was something that was kind of like that they had to do to get, you know, to get ends meet, you know, that their business must be failing if they're going to market. And that changed very fast, and now food is a lot different than, I mean, that was like 16, 17 years ago. I'm now 40. I was about 24, 25 when I was running farmers markets. And, you know, and they were the first of in Ireland. And so it really became, it was just completely organic and very natural. There wasn't the whole coolness or the very kind of hip food kind of trend that there is now in Ireland and everywhere. That wasn't there. And that's how it kind of all just evolved. And then all of a sudden then, you know, chefs started, you know, meeting the producers at the farmers market, started growing and growing and growing. A lot of great chefs and creative people started coming back from abroad, like Ali from Australia, and from loads of other chefs and creatives coming back from abroad, wanting to come home and start up their own thing. And we had a massive recession in Ireland, and that did good. That did us good, because then you had a lot of people starting up pop-ups and able to kind of rent spaces and be able to do things that they wouldn't have been able to do, we'll say, pre-recession, because everything was just ridiculously expensive and we all went mad.
It's very much like that in New York City, and you can see like where people are going. Like right now, young creative people are going to Detroit because Detroit is so accessible and affordable. Everything else about it is kind of falling apart at the seams, as you may have heard on the news, but it's a place where people can afford to start restaurants, to start artist communes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful for the day that that will happen again in New York City, but I don't know what we would have to go through in order for it to become affordable again. But I love, and have chefs and farmers taken on like a cool fact, like is there like a celebrity chef culture and a celebrity farmer, even if not as individuals but farmers in general? Are they elevated now to be cool?
For sure. I don't think celebrity really fits well in Ireland as it does kind of in other countries. So like, for example, if somebody introduces me as celebrity chef, I'm so mortified. I just think it's the, why would you call me a celebrity chef?
See, I'll give you an anecdote of how we're different. I went to a thing where I was like moderating a panel and I needed a name tag, and they said, well, what do you want me to put under your name? And just as a joke, I was like, oh, put celebrity chef, because I'm not at all, but I thought it would be funny. And people were like, where do I know her from, like talking can I take a picture with you? I was like, sure. And all I had to do was say that it was me, and that
that's
was enough.
I love that. So funny.
And now I have that pinned to my board at home. I'm like, yeah. Just all you have to do. And I tell my students, they're like, how do you get to like do how do you get to work like you work? I'm like, just, you want to be a celebrity chef? Just tell people you are, because really that's all it takes. So I want to talk about your book. We need to take a very quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk through your process and your restaurants and your
recipes. Everything.
Recipes and your television work, and we will do that right after the break.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association. The Nutritional Therapy Association, NTA, is a vocational nutrition school that develops, trains, and certifies nutritional therapy practitioners and nutritional therapy consultants to understand and reverse the tragic and unsuspected effects of the modern diet on their clients based on their bio-individual nutritional needs. There's no perfect diet for everyone. Their philosophy is that the myriad of health problems that plague modern society result from weakness in the body's physiological foundations as a result of poor nutrition, and that everyone deserves to be healthy. Throughout NTA seminars, students access a wide range of educational tools and techniques that help identify and correct nutritional imbalances from a holistic perspective, emphasizing the importance of properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole foods. Their organization was founded on the teachings of Weston A. Price and the science of Dr. Francis M. Pottinger. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am here joined by Clodagh McKenna, author of Clodagh's Irish Kitchen, this incredibly beautiful cookbook that, sorry listeners, I'm holding on to this one. Welcome back, Clodagh. So, you say in the book that the title of the book is sort of came because in your home kitchen is where you do all of your real creative work. So tell me about, like, what is an average day in your life in the kitchen look like?
What is an average day?
If there's a such thing.
There isn't such thing, but there are certain things that I do, we'll say, on a regular basis to keep me feeling right and steady and like a rock. Like my Clodagh bread that I make.
You brought me some.
I call it Clodagh bread. My friends started calling it Clodagh bread because it's a version of my soda bread that I make, and I make it every week. It's like my bread that I have at home. And I really love the idea of people making their own bread, and it's such a simple process. Mine is a soda bread, so it's not yeast, so it's incredibly simple to make. So it's just wholemeal flour, mainly wholemeal flour, a bit of white flour, baking soda, a little bit of salt, and then you can either put buttermilk in as a liquid, or else you can do like I do. I do a mix of milk and yogurt together, and you just mix it all around, make it into a round patty, and then you put it into the oven, and it's done. And somebody, a friend of mine who's a music producer, his name is William Orbit, I'll give him the shout out for this. He's produced everybody from all Madonna's, Chris Brown. He's the most famous music producer in the world.
Wow.
He's a good friend of mine. He's lovely. And he and I was teaching him how to make bread because he'd never made anything. So I was teaching him how to make my bread, and he's like, "This is the Clodagh bread. I'm going to write a song about it. It's the Clodagh bread." And he made, and it was the Clodagh bread. And I was like, yeah. And then everybody started going. So now you go to, Hicks restaurants in London, and they have the Clodagh bread on the menu. We're going to get into Fortnum's and Mason's to sell there. So I'm developing it with a bakery at the moment. And and I love it. So that's something I do all the time. I like to cook. Yeah, I like to cook Irish. I mean, I guess what I love is that I like to take, looking at things that are quintessentially Irish, or ingredients maybe that are quintessentially Irish, and bringing them together and creating a really lovely, repertoire. that's my goal, and that's what I've been doing and what I'm trying to do. Like earlier today, I was on the Daily Mail, And I cooked up Irish potato dumplings. I did them with smoked bacon in them, but I usually do them with black pudding in it. So they're little potato little dumplings.
Now tell people what black pudding is for people who may not know.
Oh, black pudding is... it's a mixture of lovely spices and pig's blood and lots of things
delicious.
Together. It's cooked together. It's actually incredible.
I had it for the first time overseas and I was like, before I went to culinary school, before I had my like sort of, I will eat anything. I was like, I would never eat blood pudding forever. Never. Like that's where I draw the line. And then I was eating this sandwich and I was like, this is the most incredible sandwich I've ever had. What is this? And the guy he was like, oh, it's blood pudding.
We love
I was like,
black pudding. Yeah.
So good.
So like those Irish little potato dumplings. And then I did it with the wild nettle soup. And then I also did my smoked gabine croquettes that are rolled in oats. Last week I did a really beautiful lunch in the boardroom at Fortnum & Mason for people who probably, you might know like Sir Michael Parkinson and these, yeah, they're big people in the UK, but I did this gorgeous, elegant Irish dinner. They wanted a beautiful, elegant, kind of contemporary Irish lunch. I was like, yeah, I can do it. and yeah, I did like beautiful carrageen moss puddings, which is using the seaweed carrageen, which is fantastic because you don't have to use any gelatin or anything. It sets it naturally and it gives a lovely wisp of the sea in it. So they're lovely, light kind of milk puddings, but you can do it with buttermilk as well. And then I did carrageen fritters on top, cinnamon, and then my soda bread ice cream. So I make an ice cream with soda bread crumbs in it. Yeah, that I cooked on Channel 4 Sunday brunch last week as well. So you probably get a drift of what I do. I take, you know, things that are Irish and I home them in and I try to make the recipes really delicious and interesting and a kind of creative Irish menu, I guess. Yeah.
You mentioned the wild nettles. There's this and the taste of the sea. There's this very clear thread of the outdoors in the book. You talk about elderflowers and all of the seaweeds and things.
Yeah.
How important to your sort of personal constitution is spending, you know, time outside for inspiration?
A lot. I mean, we're an island, so the sea and you know, wild seaweeds and it is very much a thing that's part of our whole heritage and my cooking. And it's really important to me. It's important that they're kind of used and we don't turn our back on the sea and that we're facing the sea and looking at what like great resources we have.
You have these beautiful photographs of like fishing boats and fishing villages and is it like there's like lobster pots or crab pots, something in the back. And here in the United States, eating fish is like very unpopular right now. And like the idea that you could publish seafood in a cookbook is really rare.
Really?
Yeah. And it's really heartbreaking. So my father is also was a commercial fisherman when I was growing up. And it's been incredibly difficult to sell fish cookbooks or seafood cookbooks at all. And so I was like, I'm just so thankful that someone is able to do it somewhere. Because here, despite the fact that, you know, everyone knows we should be eating more seafood and there should be more access to seafood and all of this, publishers are like, nope, people do not buy fish cookbooks. And I mean, I've heard it directly from publishers who are like, yeah, no, we don't do seafood.
Oh, for God's sake.
So, yeah, but you're doing it. You're like getting in there. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned doing the dinner party and the lunch. You have a whole section in the cookbook of pre-made menus and then also how to like set the table.
How to set the table, yeah. I love that.
So beautiful. So talk about that element of it because it's
tablescaping.
So easy.
Yeah, I love it. I love creating a moment. And I think that that's really important to do. I think that somebody said to me last week, I was having dinner with friends over and there were two of them are writers and one is a really fat, she's a really old friend of mine. She's a scriptwriter, Karen McLaughlin in Scotland. And she was saying, God, you know, last week, she was going, it's so good to have this gorgeous big dinner because I cooked a big dinner for them. And she was going, last week, you know, I actually ate beans from a tin. And she goes, and I was like, you did not. And she was like, I did. And she goes, no, sometimes you just have to do that. I'm sure, Clodagh, you've done it yourself. And I was like, actually, you know what? No, I wouldn't. I like to create a moment for myself at least once a day. I think it's important, and that always for me revolves around food. And why I reference the baked beans is that I think that you could have taken those baked beans and said, okay, I'm busy, but I can take 10 minutes. I'm going to heat up those baked beans. I'm going to get some nice hard cheese that's in there, and I'm going to make some lovely soft scrambled eggs with some melting cheese in it. And those lovely baked beans can trickle over. I'm going to sit down. Maybe there might be a little flour I can put in front of me or whatever, and I'm going to enjoy it. It's about creating a moment. The tablescaping is taking it to another little level, that you're creating a very memorable moment for a lot of people that you're sharing in the, around the table. And, you know, I have ones that are like seascapes that are all about, you know, the shells. So it's kind of taking, I guess, different things that I would find inspirational or creative. Like, you know, my mother lives on the sea in Kerry, and I go down there a lot, and we're always walking on the beach, and there's always incredible pebbles and shells and everything that we're always bringing back up. And even the two of us sitting down in front of the fire having a supper, you know, we'll do the table up really nicely, you know.
Anytime
with all the shells and everything.
Anytime people are like, oh, I don't have time to eat, I'm like, oh, I've just, it's so heartbreaking. Like, every day you have the opportunity three times to discover something, even if it's just scrambled eggs with cheese and beans. You know, it's like, just like you said.
You can find things, you know, and also just even for your table, which is lovely, you can find things everywhere. And it's just, it's like making bread or collecting sticks, you know, collecting shells if you're on a beach or whatever, and bring it back and bring it into your life to make it beautiful. Stuff that you don't buy from a shop.
So you are also a restaurateur,
yes,
and you talk about precision and the importance of like communicating to your staff, like how precise you want things. And that so resonated with me because it's true. Like when you know how you want that seashell or that bundle, you know, whatever it is, flowers or herbs tied just so, you want it a certain way because your guests, you want to create that moment for them.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me a little bit about the restaurant world and how that has been part of your life?
I mean, it's probably the hardest industry you'll go into, because it takes so much energy and it takes so much detail. It takes so much. I've learned so much when I've been in it. I've learned about about working relationships, how to, you know, talk to people properly, how to talk to people with respect when you're really under a lot of pressure. And it teaches you a lot. It teaches you about, you know, understanding, you know, your, I guess from a chef's point of view, understanding your own food style and your own food technique. Like, I'm now 40 and I would 100% know exactly if somebody put up a dish, I'd know that's my dish.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of style of food and whatever. And you get all that from it, which is a really great learning curve. And it takes a long time. Like, I see young chefs come up, you know, and or maybe young cooks that are, you know, whatever, in their younger years, and they want to get into media and everything. And I say, just take your time, enjoy it, experience loads of stuff before you decide to go into a hard world of media. Like, I am now in a world of media, so half my world is, you know, lovely and earthy and green and lovely, and then the other world is very media. And I do it because I like both. I love the communication. Like, I love being able to go on the Rachel Ray or the Daily Mail or the Today Show here and whatever, and be able to go on and cook a dish. And I get, like, I was doing Channel 4 Sunday brunch, I was cooking my clove bread on it last week, and Ali's here, flew over with me to New York, and we were like on plane because we couldn't get Wi-Fi on the plane, and I filmed it in the morning, and then I flew from London back to Dublin, and then we flew on to New York, and we were like, oh my god, we had over 300 and something messages of people baking the bread.
Wow.
So like, for me, that's like, yay. Yeah. I was so excited. I was shattered, but I was so, I mean, tears in my eyes. Get it together. It's only bloody bread. Anyway, but I was so thrilled and excited that I'd communicated properly, that people actually picked up on it and were baking their own bread. And some people for the first time. And it was like, hooray, I made the bread. I made my first bread. And there was young guys and older women and all different ages. And that's really exciting. But I think that it's important to experience all of what you can experience and become really confident in what you're doing and knowledgeable before you go into that area. I mean, I've worked at Slow Food in Italy for 3 years. I ran farmers markets for 4 years. You know, I did all my time training in restaurants and have my own restaurant, everything.
And did all that come before the media?
Yeah. When I was approached to do a television series, I filmed it, and literally I was living in Italy when it came out, because I was like, important for me to be away from there, and I got really paranoid. I was like, I need to learn more about food. I know everything about Irish food. You ask me, you know, where can I get the best sausage in County Kilkenny, I could tell you, like, I could name it. I was like an encyclopedia for it, or a directory. But I needed to learn more about other types of food, and So I went off to Italy and worked at Slow Food there for 3 years, which was a fantastic thing to have done. And it was brilliant. I remember doing a cookery demonstration in London and there was this Italian chef on in front of me. Italian with inverted commas. He's English. Italian. Snogging the girls on the... jumping down to snog the girls in the front row. And then somebody asked him a question. He was like, can you tell me the difference between this olive oil and blah, 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 and cold press and hot press, what's better? And I remember listening to him and he hadn't a clue. And I remember thinking, I'm glad I went to Italy. I'm glad I went to Italy. I know my stuff. And yeah. I went on after him, you know, and he's so famous in England. And I went on after him, nobody knowing me, but I went on with a really great inner confidence and kind of pride in myself of knowing, like, it's your culture, but I actually know more about it than you. So it's really important, I think, to... Oh, God, do I sound terrible there?
No, you. I was just going to say that is such excellent advice.
Yeah, it's such important to know yourself.
Advice. Yeah. So I mean,
because I'd never respect him again. Like yeah. Every time I think, I would never take his food seriously. It's important to know your stuff, and media is extra. It's extra stuff. It's how to communicate what you know.
And you said something else key,
anything else.
That they came to you. Like they approached you to do a television show.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
and
they did.
I sort of
went after. Yeah, yeah,
I think there's a balance between if you want that kind of platform and you want people to make your recipes. There's a certain amount of hustle where you have to put yourself in the right room and meet the right people.
Yeah.
But there's also the work where you have to write, you know, like write for free on a food blog and assume no one's going to read it. Test recipes because you love it, not because you want your own magazine someday. And I think that that's really, really good advice is to just go out and learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think nowadays a lot of young people are rushed and they feel a pressure all the time. You know, it's good. You have a big, long life ahead of you. That's
did you anytime. Feel it when you were younger?
No.
You never no. did. See, I definitely did. And no. I think I still have that demon a little bit. I've just put it in a cage.
No.
A little bit of like, I got to do it now. And all these other people are doing it and I'm not.
No, because I think when I started in Ireland, there was nobody else doing anything. Like I was the only one running farmers markets. There was nobody else. All my peers or all my colleagues were like in their cheesemakers and whatever, all in their 50s and 60s. And they were people I went to and spoke to. There was nobody. Nobody else. It's funny. I never thought about that. So no, I felt no urgency for anything.
And now do you feel like, are you a mentor to other people who aspire to be just like you?
I get a lot of people who email me and I try to give my good advice, but it's usually the advice that they don't want to hear. You know, people want it's usually the advice they don't want to hear. Like people want to get book deals right away. And I just think, why? Like, wait, your time will, you know, relax. That's what I always say, you know, relax and get good at what you do. Get good, get knowledgeable and good at what you do.
Okay, so speaking of recipes, I have typed up and we are adding to the show page your recipe for Guinness cake.
Oh, me Guinness cake!
Which I'm so excited about.
Yeah.
So, walk me through this cake and tell me, I'm going to go home and make it. I will be one of those people who will put a photograph up and tell you that I made it at home, as will the listeners, and I will encourage them to do that. So tell me, how did this cake come to exist? And How did it come to exist?
Well, I love using stout in recipes. Because it gives a lovely kind of deep caramel, kind of smoky flavor to it. And I love chocolate. So I wanted to marry the chocolates, the idea of a chocolate cake and the stout together. And what's lovely also with this, the stout is it gives a kind of a bitter taste to it, which works really well with you when you're working with something really sweet. And this recipe is lovely because I use buttermilk as well in the recipe. So it's really, really light and fluffy. So it'll probably be the lightest and fluffiest chocolate cake I think that you might have made. Maybe you made lighter. If you have actually, send me the recipe. But this is going to be really light and fluffy. And then there's like a vanilla cream cheese frosting on the top of it. It is absolutely definitely one of my favorite cakes to make. And it looks like a pint of Guinness when you make it. But I'll do something. If people make the recipe from your site and if they Instagram it to me and tag me, I'll pick the best one. I'll post them the book from Ireland.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I'll do that.
Excellent.
I will do that.
So, and I've already got a copy, so you don't have to send one to me.
Okay. No, we'll send it to the winner. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll send it to the winner. We will make sure to get all of that information together on our website at heritageradionetwork.org. Clona McKenna, I feel like there's so much more that I want to talk to you about. Thank you so much for coming on. I wish you continued success. You're so down to earth. You so deserve it. And
thank
I'm
you.
So excited to know about you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm really in love with you right now.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you to everyone in the booth. Thank you to my dad for making the drive in and buying me lunch at Roberta's Pizza. Thank you to Allie for coming over.
Yay,
on
Allie.
Airplane. Thank you to Dave for engineering the show. Listeners, you can get in touch with me, Chef Emily at sharpandhot.com. I am Chef Emily on Twitter and Instagram. Clodagh, you are Clodagh _ McKenna on Instagram and Twitter, yes?
Yeah, just search Clodagh McKenna and it comes
You're
up.
The one.
You Clodagh. Are the one.
And I have a friend who grew up in County Cork, who now lives in London, who is a big fan of yours. And we went to culinary school together.
Oh.
And I told him I would give him a shout out on the air.
So what's his name?
His name is Dermot.
Oh, hi, Dermot. I'm in London too now. Come see me.
There you go. And you have a restaurant there, yes?
I don't have a restaurant in London. I currently have a menu on in Fortnum and Mason.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't have a restaurant yet. I want to open one.
See, and it's got to be addictive, because for all of the hard work and everything, you want to do it again.
I know.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Go to iTunes and give us a review on the Sharp and Hot podcast. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.